There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Uh-huh.
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots, independent media, and our media environment. My name is Paul Reisman. I'm your host. With me today, of course, is Drew Tirico, Media Geek producer. On today's program, The Year in Unlicensed in Pirate Radio, we'll take a look at some of the big events of 2003 in Pirate Radio and also look a little bit at the history of Pirate Radio. And of course, we've got headline news about our media environment. You do want to stay tuned. Media Geek Headline News features stories of our media environment that typically get left out of the electronic media and often get buried in our newspapers. Stories about media economics, media law, and the seedy underbelly of the media are important to all of us, we think, though, if we want to have a media which more accurately reflects our needs and desires in a more democratic society. Here's some of what happened this week. According to a report released on Thursday, December 15th, by the group Reporters Without Borders, the deaths of two journalists in an attack by an American tank and troops on the Palestine Hotel in Baghdad were the result of, quote, criminal negligence, end quote, for which Washington must bear at least some responsibility. The report is a result of an investigation on the shelling which killed a Reuters cameraman, Taras Proitisiuk, and Jose Cuso, of the Spanish television station Telecinco. In the report, based on interviews with U.S. soldiers and reporters who were in the hotel at the time of the shelling, the international media watchdog said it was, quote, inconceivable that the U.S. government and military command were unaware that up to 200 journalists that had been working in the Palestine hotel before the April 8th attack. And yet, the report says, quote, this presence was never mentioned to troops in the field or marked on maps used by artillery support soldiers, end quote. Jean-Paul Marie, the reporter who carried out the investigation, told the British Guardian newspaper, quote, the soldiers on the ground, including Captain Philip Wolford, who authorized the shelling, and Sergeant Sean Gibson, the tank gunner who fired the shot, did not know and had never been told that the hotel was stuffed with journalists. The question now is whether that information was withheld deliberately out of contempt for non-embedded journalists or through criminal negligence, end quote. Reporters Without Borders had called for the U.S. investigation into who was responsible for it to be reopened. It said it would pass its findings to a Spanish investigating magistrate who will soon be opening a formal inquiry into Cuso's death.
The FCC's Michael Powell says he plans to ask Congress to greatly increase the fines that the commission can levy against broadcasters who air indecent programming between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. The current maximum fine is $27,000, which FCC commissioners have recently complained is far too little for many egregious offenses. In an appearance in front of the National Press Club on January 5th, Powell said he'd like to increase the top fine by at least 10 times, noting that for large media conglomerates, a $27,000 fine is, quote, a cost of doing business for some. Some of these fines are just peanuts, end quote. Democrat Commissioner Michael Copps expressed just that sentiment back in March 2003 when the FCC levied the top fine against Viacom-owned radio station WKRK in Detroit. That station aired an afternoon drive-time program full of explicit sexually violent talk that made jokes of sex acts involving beating and mutilating women. In his comments on that station's fines, Copps said, quote, I am deeply disappointed that the majority proposes a mere $27,500 fine against this station. Such a fine will easily be absorbed by the station as a cost of doing business, end quote. Powell's remarks were well received by lawmakers. Representative Fred Upton, a Republican of Michigan, who chairs the House Commerce Committee's telecommunications panel, said he was preparing legislation that would substantially increase the fines.
And that's some of what's going on this week in our media environment. Coming up in just a moment, we're looking at unlicensed and pirate radio. Of course, a favorite topic here in Media Geek. And when Media Geek's not on the air, which unfortunately is most of the time, you can check out the Media Geek website at www.mediageek.org, where you can see constantly updated news of our media environment, as well as listen to old archive editions of the program in MP3 in the open source Ogg Vorbis format. If Ogg Vorbis doesn't make any sense to you, check out the Media Geek website, and all will be explained. Swedish master of the fretboard, Yngwie J. Malmsteen. I think that cramped every riff he's ever written into about a minute.
And every riff Bach has ever written.
That's right. And in fact, strangely enough, that song is called Baroque and Roll on his new CD, Attack.
Attack.
All right. That sets the scene here for some pirate radio, perhaps, Drew.
Yeah, definitely. I think the cops should be busting in here just because of that one, for sure.
Is Yngwie J. Malmsteen now considered indecent?
I think so, definitely, yeah. It's sexually explicit.
So we thought we'd take a look a bit at 2003 and unlicensed and pirate radio, which is sort of it's the real rebellious side of community media, especially here in the U.S., and also a little bit about some historical stuff of pirate radio. And what kind of prompted us to this is that Freak Radio Santa Cruz, which is now, I think, an 8-year-old unlicensed station in Santa Cruz, California, put together this hour-long compilation.
Yeah, that's right. It's called Pirates of the Air. And I think, actually, they mentioned on there that they've been around for 10 years.
Oh, 10 years.
10
I'm
years
sorry.
Old. Yeah, that's right. And it's a sound collage that they did of pirate radio recordings that they've made around the California area and probably beyond. And what we did was we took some highlights of that, and we're going to be playing them for you, so you can check it out pretty soon.
To kind of set the stage, though, we thought we'd look at a couple things that happened so far in 2003. And first, we're going to hear an excerpt of an interview I did with John Anderson, who is a friend of the show, who runs a website called DIYmedia.net. He's also a researcher and reporter on unlicensed and pirate radio, and especially his research focuses on the FCC, how they deal with unlicensed broadcasters, and how the FCC also goes to court with unlicensed broadcasters, so something he's always very much up on. And so we talked a little bit about how the FCC has been pursuing unlicensed broadcasters up to about August of 2003.
The way the statistics are shaping up right now is that the FCC is reacting along the way that they outlined earlier in the year when the Enforcement Bureau Chief, Linda Blair, gave a presentation to the commissioners. It was a progress report on what they've done in the last
year.
Yeah. And anyway, she gave this presentation and she said, unlicensed radio stations are a problem. We've gotten a lot more serious about going after these stations and actually shutting them down. And the way she described the tactics that were being used were, we're going to dispense with warnings. So if it's an egregious violation and it happens willfully and repeatedly, we just might not even warn people anymore. We'll just sock them with a fine. But the primary point that she was making was, we're going to pursue this along the forfeiture route. We're not going to militarize. We're not going to go in with SWAT teams or federal marshals and make an effort to seize transmitters. We're just going to do the paperwork side, issue the fines in hopes that that's enough to shut people down, and I really don't think it will be. Because the FCC, in general, also doesn't have the power to collect on its own fines. It has the power to issue fines, but if it really wants to collect on it, it must file a civil suit, and that requires the participation of the Department of Justice, who doesn't like taking FCC cases because they're afraid of getting some local judge who doesn't understand communications law issues. And so, for the most part, even when the FCC issues fines, they collect on maybe a quarter to a half of them.
And this is to private individuals.
This is to anybody.
Yeah.
This is all across the institution, whether they're fining telemarketers, licensed broadcasters, unlicensed broadcasters, whatever. Institutionally, they collect one half to one quarter of all fines that they issue. And of the fines that they collect only about three quarters of the amount on average.
Well, and they often, I mean, they negotiate down, I know, in many of these things. And it's easiest, comparatively speaking, for them to collect from the licensed broadcaster simply because they always have the ability to, although almost never express, to take away your license and for the violations and failure to pay. Although it doesn't happen nearly enough.
Yeah, I mean, like on the paperwork side of things, it really looks, especially this year, with the amount of fines or notices of apparent liability, which are the precursor to an official fine, out of all those that they've issued this year, it looks like they're just going gangbusters on unlicensed broadcasting because they've issued $100,000+ worth of fines. But not now. I mean, it's up to the stations to pay those fines, and for the most part, unlicensed broadcasters are not going to capitulate that easily.
And one station that has been threatened with being shut down and threatened with fines by the Federal Communications Commission, although they have not followed through with the threat so far, is Radio Free Brattleboro, which is a truly scrappy unlicensed station in Brattleboro, Vermont. And they were visited for the first time in early 2003 by the FCC, who came in and delivered to them a notice telling them they should shut down or they will face fines. They did shut down, but then went back on the air. And they had an unusual strategy in sort of setting up their own defense and showing the FCC that they have the support of their community and indeed what they believe is the legal right to broadcast because of the support of their community. And I talked to Sarah Longsmith from Radio Free Brattleboro back in October of 2003, and this is what she had to say about their strategy.
Did you hear from the FCC at all from the beginning in 1998 through, the beginning of 2003?
No, we did not. And what happened was that a person from an outer-lying town next to Brattleboro was trying to get a signal from Amherst, Massachusetts, which is about 45 miles south. And it's an NPR affiliate. It's called WFCR, and it operates at 50,000 watts. We're at the very fringe of their broadcast range. And we were a couple clicks away on the dial, and where he lives is also the fringe of the broadcast range for Radio Free Brattleboro. And so for a variety of reasons, we interfered with his signal. And instead of letting us know so that we could go out to his house and give him materials so that he could get a clearer signal or hire an engineer, as we have done in the past, to adjust our own signal, because we really do not want to interfere with anyone. We really want to just occupy empty spots on the dial. So basically he filed a complaint with that station, WFCR, and in turn WFCR filed a complaint with the FCC. And then it took about 6 months for the FCC agents to come to our door. They did not inform us ahead of time in writing. They just came and asked to inspect our equipment.
And when was this? When did they come?
They came on June 24th of this year.
And they came and they asked to inspect the equipment. Were they allowed to inspect it?
Yes, they were at the time in the studio. I believe it was a teen that was inside, and at the time we did not have as complete a training of what to do if the FCC knocks on the door as we do have in place right now. And the FCC agents are oftentimes, and in this case, were quite intimidating. They make a lot of threats. And they basically coerce you into opening the door, even though they did not have a warrant. And so the person let them in, and they looked around and left us a form letter, took a couple photos, grabbed a copy of our membership list with all of the people's names and contact numbers on them, and told us that we would hear from them shortly in writing. And then they did send us a letter, basically citing the regulations that we were not abiding by, the communication laws that we were not abiding by, and threatening us with fines of $10,000 a day, and asked us to cease broadcasting if we did not have a license. And basically, their letter was pretty form-like, but one phrase really stood out for us, and that phrase was, "Show us your authority or your license to broadcast." So, show us your license or your authority to broadcast. But we kept asking each other, what does that mean, show us your license or your authority to operate? And it seemed to us that the FCC would not have put that phrase in a form letter if there wasn't a reason for it. And so we asked our lawyers, and our lawyers said, well, they did not define what authority to operate meant. And so it was free for us to choose and to define it as we saw fit. And this is apparently a common legal procedure when there's a lack of clarification about a phrase or a clause or something like that, there it's up for dispute.
Yes, so you go ahead and define it yourself.
And so we decided that this is our logic. The public owns the airwaves, which is mandated in, I believe, in 1934, the original mandate that started the Federal Communications Commission, and that the FCC was charged with making those airwaves, which were termed as the commons, they're sort of like a traditional town commons, accessible to ordinary citizens. And so we decided that the local people own the local airwaves, and that it was the local people, the community, that had the authority to give us to operate. And so we began by operating under the premise that the community already had implicitly given us authority to operate. We embarked upon a process for documenting that authority to operate.
The community support behind you.
Right. And so we drafted a petition, which each resident of Brattleboro may sign, this document that gives us authority to operate. And we also have an online petition at petitiononline.com where non-residents of Brattleboro that are our supporters, either they live just directly outside of Brattleboro and they come here to work, or they own a business here, or they shop here, or they go to school here. They're also our listeners. They're also our DJs, so they have the ability to give us authority to operate.
You managed to get signatures of support from people in the community and supporters from outside the community. About how many people?
I think right now our signature totals are roughly 2,800. It's about 10 or 15% of Brattleboro residents have gotten a chance to sign the petition. And
that's about as many people in many cases show up to vote, isn't it?
It's actually a lot more than people who show up to vote for our annual town meeting day that we have every March. What we're looking for now is official support from the town of Brattleboro, in which the town of Brattleboro grants us authority to operate and supports our operation and upholds it as a responsible community organization.
And that interview happened back in October, and then on November 18th, in fact, the Brattleboro Select Board, which is like a city council in Vermont, actually did approve a resolution. And it doesn't quite go as far as Sarah had hoped, but the resolution was to, quote, support Radio Free Brattleboro and the concept of community radio and encourage the Federal Communications Commission to work with Radio Free Brattleboro and other applicants to obtain a low-power FM license, which will enable them to serve the needs of the community and its members, end quote.
Okay, so that's and you said that was a non-binding
resolution? It's a non-binding resolution, so it's really, it's a declaration. you know, in many regards. And in fact, there's very little that a city could do to hold back the FCC. For example, the City Council of San Francisco passed a similar resolution, though with stronger language, that actually was asking the police force not to cooperate with the FCC or with federal marshals in the event that they went in to bust their community radio station about a license called San Francisco Liberation Radio. But the bust went down anyway. Mm-hmm. And that went down, I believe, in October, and there were San Francisco City Police there. Despite the support of the City Council in that, there was, again, I guess they could have passed some sort of order or law that said, you know, the police will not cooperate, but that probably would have been politically very difficult.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, that would have probably created an interesting situation then. I mean, if the FCC was forced to enforce something, but the local police, I mean, would they have to call in, like, a National Guard?
Well, they brought in the federal marshals, which they typically do anyway.
Oh, right, okay.
You know, it seems to me the way law enforcement usually works, they try to have all, you know, the local police didn't know it was going down, they'd probably be pretty ticked, unless it was some sort of super secret operation, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I try not to know too much about law enforcement, quite frankly. But something else which they're trying to get, in addition to the support here of the Brattleboro City Council, is that they're trying to get a non-binding question in front of the Brattleboro citizens at the town's annual meeting day, which is sort of, again, the colonial-esque Vermont version of an election day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure when that's coming up. I'll have to check in with Radio Free Brattleboro. But the ballot question that they want to get on reads as the following, quote, shall the voters of Brattleboro give to Radio Free Brattleboro authority to broadcast until such a time that a low-power FM license is issued to Radio Free Brattleboro or to another nonprofit locally-based community group which is prepared to offer to the town of Brattleboro diverse, all-access, non-commercial community radio, end quote. An interesting thing is right now the FCC would not give a license to Radio Free Brattleboro because they've been operating without a license and the FCC knows about them. There's the so-called character clause, which has been challenged in court once so far, and the plaintiff lost. But I believe there may be appeals yet to come trying to say, you know, if you want pirate radio to go away, then you're going to have to allow pirates to become low-power licensed broadcasters. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. It's murky waters in many ways. And in many ways, many broadcasters like San Francisco Liberation Radio and Freak Radio Santa Cruz don't really want licenses. You know,
right, it adds to their mystique, I'm sure.
Well, not even that so much as that they think that the system of giving out license the way it's all going down is relatively corrupt.
Uh-huh.
And so they're just sort of playing into the hands. Although San Francisco Liberation Radio has filed paperwork asking for a license, but a modified license, saying there are some exceptions that would be necessary to get us on the air. Would you grant them? And the FCC never responds.
Right.
So that's sort of interesting. Let's go on to this bit of compilation you have, mm-hmm. you brought in from Freak Radio Santa Cruz. And I think this is the introduction and sort of self-explanatory.
I hope so.
This is a bulletin for all free radio operators and listeners. It's time to make a stand for free radio. This is a formal protest against the FCC's interpretation of the Communications Act of 1934. The FCC has made it impossible for you to listen to and enjoy Hope Radio and stations like ours. Hope Radio International is going public with its operations. We feel that what we do and stations like us is nothing to be ashamed of. The FCC has made it impossible for the common working man to get a license. They claim that by making licenses available only to corporations or religious money fronts, they've brought up the quality of the service. One listen to the state of domestic radio reveals the sorry truth. Hope Radio International plans on making its facilities available to other creative individuals who have programming they wish to broadcast. The radio scene has exceeded all previous standards, both in activity and reports to the DX magazines. Now is the time to stand up for what you believe in. The FCC will surely attempt to turn this into a quote-unquote conspiracy to impede the authority of the FCC. You can be sure that criminal charges will be brought against me for doing this, my equipment confiscated, and probably I'll be thrown in jail. I'm appealing to you when this happens. Don't let it be for nothing. Contact your local media. Those of you who are quick with a pen, write to your newspapers. File civil rights charges against the FCC
They are violating your civil rights by not letting you have great stations like ours and by not letting us present our programming to you.
Friends, I think it may be time to come and visit the station if you know where it's at. It looks like we may have visitors. Yes, we have police with a search warrant. So, come on and visit.
Can I see your search warrant? Just slip it through right here by the hinges.
They're pounding on the door. Get your butts over here, everybody.
Well, I have no problem.
I have no problem letting you in. Just show me your search warrant.
Not so free radio. Hello. Hello.
Why won't you let me see your search warrant? Hello out there. I would like to see your search warrant. Are you even talking to me?
Welcome to the micro-powered radio movement. By listening to this free radio station, you have joined millions of other people in hundreds of cities, suburbs, and small towns across this country and around the world who have chosen to listen to the call for freedom on the airwaves.
This is the Black Rose for Fresno, California. Support 96.3 Santa Cruz. That's your radio station, and you better protect it.
Perhaps you need a small demonstration, Gomez. The device.
Here, Master. Here, boss. Here it is.
Turn it on. Now you'll see. I mean here that I truly hold the universe hostage.
It's bad, Master.
I know this part isn't so bad, but it really, really gets awful in a minute.
It's bad, Master.
Had enough? Turn it off, Gomez. If you refuse to make the universe in my plaything, I'll...
Master.
Off, Gomez, off! Wretched thing off!
Boss, I'm trying, boss!
Let me have it! Oh my God, it won't shut off! It's out of control! Run for your lives! It's loose! It's loose, and I can't stop it!
Here's some compilation of unlicensed and pirate radio broadcasts, courtesy of Freak Radio Santa Cruz. Which is a 10-year running unlicensed station in Santa Cruz, California, a community station, much like WEFT, except they run at very low power and without a license.
Yeah, they've got a group of them, that a collective, though. That's how they run it. In fact, that's one of the other tracks. I don't think we're gonna have time to get to it, but the guy is he's on the phone with the guy from the FCC, and he's invited him to come to their meeting because the guy from the FCC is trying to find out who else is working this radio station so he can put their names on the list and possibly try to prosecute them. So the guy is telling him, and it's this Skidmark
Bob, yeah,
telling him to come to the meeting and just, you know, and talk to all of them, but you know, the FCC guy wasn't up for it.
They're not really into collective process at the Federal Communications Commission. Well, thanks for bringing that in, Drew. And if you're interested in hearing more, it's at radio.indymedia.org in MP3
that's right.
Format.
Yeah, the whole hour-long special. You should be able to find it. It's called Pirates of the Air.
All right. Well, that brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I want to actually encourage everyone in the Champaign-Urbana area to turn out for the third anniversary of the Independent Media Center of Urbana-Champaign, January 19th from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at the UCIMC storefront location, 218 West Main Street in downtown Urbana. It's open to the public, and there'll be refreshments and live musical entertainment by classical guitarist Brian Boyd. And there will be numerous exhibits showcasing the UCIMC's many projects, including media production activities, which are like a weekly radio show on web, the Public Eye newspaper, video documentaries, and more, as well as a middle room gallery, live concerts, and extensive library. And Drew and I are both members of the video group, and I believe our cohort Dave is slaving away on a short documentary about the IMC.
Yes, he'll be there tonight.
Good. Going to give him a hand there. Sounds fine. So definitely come by, check out, and learn more about the Independent Media Center of Urbana-Champaign as it celebrates its third anniversary as one of the longest-running, continually, and oldest independent media centers in the country. In the short, young movement, but strong movement of independent media. And also, we'll be back next week. And of course, in the meantime, you can look to the Media Geek website, www.mediageek.org.